Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
801 Sports Radio 94 WIP. Joe Giglio with you. Tucker Bagley behind the glass. We have Sue Schilling on the update tonight. You guys with us. 888-729-9494. Hopefully, that song is not what we'll be talking about on Sunday as the Eagles go down to D.C. and slog their way against a 3-10 team. But you know what? You never know. Chris Russell, he's a host, 106.7 The Fan down in D.C., does some writing. Now, I believe, for the new Sports Illustrated site. We'll get the latest on that. But Chris knows D.C. sports inside and out. We'll talk about this Redskins team and then what's going on with the hot stove. Big week, including Strasburg back to the World Series Nats and Rendon out to Los Angeles. Chris Russell on the show right now. How you doing, Chris?
Hey, Joe. How are you, pal? What's going on?
Well, we're looking forward to a game on Sunday that feels like the game before the game. You know those for like pseudo contenders here, pretend contenders like the Eagles? Like
right.
They have the Cowboys next week. That's where, right. You know, the Cowboys next week is the game. And yep. This week, this game is a little bit of a trap game. 3-10, the Redskins. Mm-hmm. Last time we saw them, they were here, was week one. What's changed? What's the same? What do you think here, Chris?
Well, you know, I would settle, first of all, for being pretend contenders any day of the week and 10 times on Sunday. But for the Redskins, they just suck. So let's start with that. So I'd rather have your situation than the situation I'm stuck dealing with here. So what's changed from week one is this. Obviously, you start with the starting quarterback and the head coach. Both are different. Case Keenum in week one, he's been benched. He was injured a couple of times. Dwayne Haskins, he has been inefficient. He has been inaccurate. He has gotten better at the little things. He runs a fairly smooth ship. Gets them in and out of the huddle, struggles terribly with pass protection and identifying blitzes. I think he's going to have a hard time, you know, not just with blitzes, just with different looks and kind of different alignments and picking up free guys and all that stuff. And then obviously at the head coaching spot, Jake Root, fired after five games and after five-plus years. And Bill Callahan is – Jake Gruden was a player-friendly – happy-go-lucky, pass-happy guy. Well, Bill Callahan is exactly the opposite, Joe. He's a run-first type of guy. He's serious. He's old school. And the players don't like him all that much because he makes them actually work hard on fundamentals and work hard on things like, practice, which the Redskins really didn't do for five-plus years.
Chris, so what, I mean, when you look at this team, Chris, the last couple of weeks I've watched some of their games and specifically a little bit against the Panthers and the Packers because I was, you know, kind of thinking ahead to the Eagles game. I wanted to watch them a little bit. They've been in these games. Like, I know it's not a very talented team. I know they're 3-10 for a reason, but it just feels like game to game and really play to play here, they're not being blown off the ball at all.
No. Yeah, they usually don't get embarrassed. I mean, there was the Jet game out of the bye, which was 34-3, and even that, they got off the floor, scored a couple of fourth-quarter touchdowns to make it, I guess, you know, sort of representable. But just about every game. You mentioned the Carolina game. They were down 14-0. First two drives in that game, they got off the mat. They kept running the ball, and then they just wore down Carolina and took over in the second half and controlled, you know, that game last week at Lambeau, down 14-0, first three drives of the game, nothing going right on offense, defense. You're thinking doors blown off. And after the first quarter, they outscored them 15-6. Now, you know, unfortunately for them, the game started at 105, not 135. And that's the thing for the Eagles here. You know, the Redskins have been down, Joe, double digits late in the first quarter or very early in the second quarter in three of their last four games. So this is an opportunity for the Eagles. If the Birds can come in here and, again, catch the Redskins napping from, say, 105 to 130 or 135 and take a 10, 12, 13, 14-point lead, then you should be good to go.
Chris, the one thing that seems to stands out to me that could be a worry for the Eagles is the defensive line for Washington is stout. Yep. And tell us about Montez Sweat, because I think it's interesting that the Eagles They took their left tackle of the future, Andre Dillard, one pick, I think one or two picks before Montez Sweat went to Washington. And an issue here for the Eagles, both now and moving forward, is they don't have enough of an edge pass rush. So I think those two will be linked for a while. Tell us about Sweat and obviously that defensive line.
Yeah, so Sweat obviously is going to play, you know, at the edge outside linebacker in the 3-4, and he's going to play even more than he has been playing, which is, you know, he's been starting, but he hasn't been playing every single down because they kind of split up the time between he and Ryan Anderson, a second-round pick from a couple of years ago from Alabama, who's more like a base run kind of guy, although he did have a sack and a forced fumble. Well, this week, they should both start because Ryan Kerrigan, who normally tortures the Eagles, is out. He was put on IR officially today. We knew he wasn't going to play in the game, so you're going to see a lot of Montez Sweat. Joe, he's been slowly coming along. He's 6'5 and a half, 6'6". He's got a really long reach and kind of like that wiry body. He's starting to come into his own. He's starting to feel like the pass rusher that they were kind of expecting him to be. Got off to a real slow start. So I expect him to fill in on that left side more for Kerrigan. They will switch him to both sides. So he'll go up against the left and right tackle, kind of depending on the call and depending on the situation. As far as the defensive line, I mean, people in Philadelphia know Matty Ioannidis from his days at Temple. He was kind of an unheralded player there. He's probably and arguably, and I wouldn't even argue it, the best Redskins defensive lineman, and that's with two first-round Alabama picks in Jonathan Allen and De'Ron Payne. Those guys are good. Matt Ioannidis has been very, very good. I don't know if I would say great, but he is very good coming from the left defensive end 3-4 spot. He's got 7.5, maybe 8 sacks, Joe. He beats double teams. He's a plugger. He's a fighter. He just finds a way, despite not having like the ideal like frame that you would want, to just find a way to get pressure on the quarterback and to get the quarterback down, whereas others don't do that. So I would say that would be the guy that I would – you know, kind of be fearful of the most. And De'Ron Payne is really good too when he's on his game. And, you know, that is no doubt about it, the strength of this Redskins defense, because they don't have any other strengths.
Chris Russell, 106.7, the Fan down at D.C., joining us here talking about Eagles Redskins. We'll touch on the hot stove and what the Nationals didn't do and what they might do coming up in a minute. But, Chris, if I had looked at this game before the season started and I said if there's one receiver on either roster that would have this kind of stat line, 46 catches, 703 yards, over 15 yards a catch, 6 touchdowns with a long of 69. My guess would have probably been DeSean Jackson, but those are the numbers of Terry McLaurin, the rookie, who we saw here in week one, and it feels like he's just continued to really put together an excellent rookie season. He seems like a problem for the Eagles.
Yeah, he is. He's a great route runner, and as everybody in Philadelphia remembers, he got open on that, 70-yard bomb on a deep post, and he really should have had another one, Joe, if you remember that, in case Keenum overthrew him. He was wide open again, and that could have really changed the context of that game, and maybe, who knows, even for the season. Now, he did go through a dry spell. The passing offense for the Redskins is beyond atrocious. They don't have any tight ends. They were missing Chris Thompson for 5 weeks. They went from, again, Case Keenum to Dwayne Haskins to Colt McCoy, back to Case Keenum, back to Dwayne Haskins. it's been a mess. The offensive line is inconsistent, but that's the one guy who can strike up the bat. Now, they've gotten a little bit better with Steven Sims out of the slot and Kelvin Harmon, all three rookies. So it's a very, very, very young but dynamic receiving core. Again, McLaurin can take the top off. I think clearly you still have to respect him with a safety over the top or bracket, and if you're going to get beat, then you get beat by Kelvin Harmon, or maybe if you miss a tackle in space, again, this Steven Sims kid, who can also return kicks and punts and is lightning fast. So, again, this is going to be a challenge for the Eagles. They don't have a tight end that they have to fear, like a Jordan Reed or a Vernon Davis. Remember, Vernon Davis had that leaping, kind of hurtling touchdown down the sideline in week one. He's been gone for a long time. Jordan Reed has never played this year. So it's all about the perimeter receivers, and as long as they make sure they don't miss a tackle in space on this slot kid, Steven Sims.
Chris, what's it going to be like in the crowd Sunday? You know, I've seen, you know, the clips of Redskins games this year, and it feels like a lot of empty seats. And I saw a story in the Washington Post this week about Redskins fans basically after a lot of years jumping ship and maybe starting to root for the Baltimore Ravens, who are the clearly the attraction in the NFL right now. What's the fan base like down there as another losing season played out?
Well, it's awful, Joe. There's no other way to say it. You remember week 17 last year. Now, I understand it was a different, you know, set of circumstances. The Eagles were win and in, you know, so it was different. The Redskins had just been eliminated the week before. This, they're eliminated already, and it's only week 15, and it's been an atrocious season in every way you could look at it. And while I don't sense maybe the Eagles fandom will be as strong as maybe it was week 17 of last year, when many that were there predicted, you know, or said, analyzed 75-25, 80-20 in favor of the Birds fans, you know, I would be surprised if it's any less than, I don't know, 60-40 Birds fans. You know, maybe 55-45, but Redskins fans just don't give it. You know what? They just don't care. They're so beaten down. They're so angry at the president and general manager, who somehow keeps his job 10 years running now, averaging 10 losses a year, 5 double-digit losses in 10 years for Bruce Allen, 20-plus years of ownership for Dan Snyder. They hate the stadium. They hate the experience. They hate the Eagles. They hate the Redskins, and they take it out on the players because it's not a fun team to watch, even though they've got some young talent, and again, they hate the owner and the president and GM, so they don't go, and I can't blame them, honestly.
It is a mess, and hopefully the Eagles, or at least we hope, can take advantage of it. Chris, also, we need to touch on the hot stove. I mean, look, the Nationals, since last time we talked, won the World Series, which was amazing, and they earned every bit of that with a great run throughout the World Series, and now, obviously, things have changed because Steven Strasburg opted out, and then he came back on a gigantic deal, $7,245. And then Anthony Rendon, he departs, which leaves them with a big hole at third base. Rendon goes to the Angels. Before we get to what they might do moving forward and at third base, Chris, what did you think of really what seemed like their decision, which was Strasburg over Rendon?
Yeah, everybody expected that, to be honest with you, Joe, because Mike Rizzo, the president and GM, is a pitching first and a starting pitching first kind of guy, and they love Strasburg, and who can blame them, right? Dude was 5-0, even though he gave up a couple of early inning home runs in some games. He was 5-0. He was mostly lights out. He was gutty. He was gritty. First year in his entire career that he stayed healthy for every start, wasn't on the DL at all, was the modern day miracle for him. So they, you know, they had to reward him. I'm surprised they went 7-245, but because he deferred a lot of his contract upwards of like $80 million, it really is, you know, in present day kind of payout for luxury tax purposes, about a $25 million per year contract, which isn't that much when you consider what Strasburg has developed into. But everybody knew it was going to be Strasburg over Rendon. Rendon kind of, I would say, sort of soured on the fan base a little bit in September when they were only averaging 22,000 a game, despite the Nationals playing really well, and that was before the playoff run. I think he was affected and disappointed and frustrated and angry over the ownership group's offer, which they made right around Labor Day, maybe in that time frame. He was very disappointed about that, yet he had a monster postseason. But I knew he was gone. The question for me became, I had heard Philadelphia was early on in the process heavily involved, and I'm talking about in August, Joe, like when they let Mike Franco, I know I said it on Twitter and on the radio, I'm kind of surprised they didn't get more heavily involved. I know they were rumored by Bob Nightingale about a week ago, but Rendon would have never been a great fit there. I think he's going to be a good fit in Southern California with no pressure, essentially playing for the Angels. And it's good for him, obviously, he gets his money in the Nationals. You know, we're kind of cheap in terms of their offer, quite honestly.
Chris, how do they replace him now? Because it's not just replacing a guy. I mean, Anthony Rendon was, you know, a tremendous player. And along with Juan Soto, you know, those guys just killed opposing pitching and helped lead the Nationals to a World Series. So there's some free agent options. I've seen the connection to Josh Donaldson. There's also the Chris Bryant trade market. How do they replace how do they replace Rendon? Because really, how they replace him will dictate how I feel about their chances to go back to the playoffs and go deep again.
Yeah, I wonder, I seriously wonder if they're going to spend big money or big assets or big even though they've been connected to all of those guys that you mentioned, because they have a kid named Carter Keyboom who can play second, who can play short. But a scout that I talked to last night in the American League has always told me, and he reiterated it last night when he was listening to me on the radio, and he does not work for the Nationals organization, said Carter Keyboom, in his opinion, is going to be a really good Major League third baseman, and he's almost ready if he's not ready out of spring training. So I would be a little bit surprised, honestly, if they spent big money at third base. Now, maybe if they can get Donaldson for a two-year deal, maybe they do that. I don't see them going three or four. I could be wrong on that. I don't see them, again, having the assets, because I think it would take this Carter Keyboom to trade for Chris Bryant, or I know even Arenado has been kind of mentioned as out there and possible. Maybe they even go the cheap route and go, you know, again, a Michael Franco, somebody that you guys are familiar with, as some, you know, a Todd Frazier, a warm body to kind of hold the table, if you will, until they feel Carter Keyboom, this young prospect, their top prospect, is ready to go. And they've done such a good job with that, it's hard to argue. I mean, you look at Soto and Robles and, you know, everybody else that they've Trey Turner, I mean, it's hard to argue that they're not going to ultimately be right by taking the cheaper road and going with the young stud and developing it that way.
Interesting. Chris, before I let you go, what was your takeaway from the winter meetings? I mean, number one, Scott Boras just, it's unbelievable. Yeah. He just cleaned up. Yeah. And then two, it's kind of fun because last year, and I know you were part of it with your reporting and what you heard about the Harper thing, but like everything last year went on and dragged on so long, which from a talk show host perspective, I didn't mind because we had something to talk about every day. But
I agree.
But most fans got tired of it. This year, it feels like the opposite.
Just the opposite. I was talking about this last night on my show, Joe. It's interesting that you bring this up. When I came to think about this, and using essentially the same comparison that you just laid out, is Boras has said forever he works for these guys, right? They empower him. Not he empowers them, right? And I never believed that. I kind of scoffed out. I was like, Scott Boras just tells these guys what to do, and they just, you know, they're just like sheep, and they listen. I don't know. I mean, Strasburg wanted to stay in Washington. Now, he wanted to be paid, but he wanted to stay in Washington, so he got creative. Harper wanted a 13-year deal or as long of a deal as possible, and he got him a 13-year deal by waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, even though he had made up his mind essentially in mid-February, right? They just kept waiting it out. Then you look at Gerrit Cole. He wanted to, you know, all the reports were to go Southern California. He wanted to go to the New York Yankees. He grew up a Yankee fan. He got him there. And I can go on down the list. Rendon, again, wanted out of Washington, essentially, wanted no deferred money. He got him a deal, and he got him a deal early. So to me, that's the thing that I take out of it, is that I've always been of the belief that Boras controls the players. I think truly what Boras has said all along, these players are now taking control and destiny of their own situation, and Boras is truly working for them and essentially employing what they want to do and how they want to do it. And I got to give them credit for that.
Good stuff. Chris Russell, 106.7 The Fan down in D.C. Chris, I always appreciate hopping on. Fun conversation. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Joe. I'll talk to you tomorrow morning on my show.
There he goes. Chris Russell. Yes, I'm going on his show tomorrow. He comes on my show. I go on his show tomorrow morning. How about that, Tucker?
Yeah, I'm going to talk to his producer tomorrow, too.
You're going on the show too?
Just to talk to his producer.
Just so it's like even.
Yeah.
All right. Tucker will talk to the producer down in DC tomorrow. Let's grab Steve quickly in Norristown. What's up, Steve?
Hey, Joe. How we doing?
Good, buddy. What's up?
Before I get to my player who needs some tough love, I agree with you. I think that we are going to win on Sunday, but I'm worried with the Cowboys, especially for the fact even. Like Sunday, let's say they lose Sunday, and they come in here with a four game losing streak. I feel like they're going to be like ready to try and like take it away from us. Or if they actually beat the Rams, I mean, they're going to come in with their chest, you know, out and stuff like that. Like, what do you see as a better scenario for that Week 16 matchup?
Well, I'm always going to vote with the Cowboy loss, Steve, because here's the thing.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah, and I think there's a point where, yes, I hear your point that, like, all right, eventually they're going to get up off the mat, they're going to be desperate, and it's kind of similar to October, right? The Cowboys had lost three in a row before the Eagles went down there in October and got shellacked. So it could be similar to kind of what you're saying here for next week, but I think if they lose again, Steve, like all the talk about Jason Garrett's job, all the talk about imploding, losing out, I think they're going to be like a battered and fractured team mentally if they lose again. Like they're going to be in total free fall mode. And here's the thing, Steve, if the Eagles win Sunday and the Cowboys lose, the Eagles can clinch the division next Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is, I'll tell you what, if that actually occurred where like the Rams beat the Cowboys and then the Eagles beat the Cowboys, I mean, you're too guaranteed to Monday morning is going to be Black Monday for Garrett. I don't even think they'll give him week 16 or week 17.
I agree. Yeah, no, it'll be like Chip Kelly. He'll be out before week 17. Steve, good call. I appreciate it. Yeah, how about that? Garrett fired before the season even ends? That actually could happen.
Who would be their interim head coach?
Kellen Moore. What's the defensive coordinator? Chris Richard?
That'd be him, right?
Marinelli still there lurking around as defensive line coach? I don't know. But look, at that point, if they go from 6-4 to eliminated before week 17, someone's got to get fired. All right, 888-729-9494. Who needs some tough love? And do you trust the Eagles here on Sunday? I do. I trust the Eagles to go down there despite all their issues and win this football game on Sunday against Washington. All right, let me tell you about something really cool we have going on. The benefit show for Big Daddy Graham. It's coming up Friday, December 27th. So 2 weeks from today, 7:30 p.m. at the Media Theater. Look, Big Daddy's friends have come together to raise money to help him with his ongoing medical costs. You got Glenn Mack now, Ray Dittinger, Markson Reese, Joe Conklin, Spence Knightley, Jimmy Schubert, Al Morgani, Rhea Hughes. Everyone is going to be there to hang out. And look, it's a great event for Big Daddy. It really matters to us and everyone at WIP, and really, I think you'd enjoy it. So head on out, mediatheater.org. You get your tickets there Friday, December 27th, 7:30 at the Media Theater. It is the benefit show for Big Daddy Graham. All right, we'll come back. Your phone calls, 888-729-9494. And I want to play for you something that I saw today that as a Seinfeld fan, I loved and I want to share with you guys. Seinfeld, I believe 28 years ago, was kind of prophesized the score of an NBA game last night. I'll explain. We'll let you hear it coming up next. Sports Radio 94 WIP.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.